Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hey folks, Baloo here. Just chiming in before the episode to let you know that we had some issues with our recording platform on this episode. So there's some questionable sound quality with my voice a little ways into the episode that gets better. But we just wanted to give you a heads up, let you know that there's nothing wrong with your speakers, and to thank you for listening. All right, here comes the show.
D&D Versus is a spooky, scary, vile, and violent podcast intended for mature listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
Okay, welcome back to D&D Versus. I am Yanata Blue, and once again, I am here with...
Chris Single. Back at it again. Still alive. Still trying to change lives.
Nathan, thank you for coming back for another episode on what has turned into the show record-breaking run for a single character. How are you feeling about that?
You know, honored. As a fighter, you know, my first instincts as Chris Single is to not fight, and that's worked out really well.
Yeah, there is something to be said for that. I mean, a DM really has to be hell-bent on taking out a character if you're going to be as pacifist and as, you know, canny as I'll admit that you've been playing. But we'll come back to that in a moment. Before we dive into the show and the recap, can you start us off with another character fact about Chris Single?
Yeah. I guess since everyone wants to know what Chris's workout routine is, he starts every morning eating an entire large bowl of cottage cheese with 8 eggs. And it gets all in his beard. And over the course of the morning while he's working out, it stays in his beard before he finally washes himself. And he'll do, you know, kind of like Mark Wahlberg, he'll do like a 3-hour routine in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Before and after, he'll pray.
I don't think I've ever had as clear a sense of how a character smells as I do Chris Single.
Oh, the rest of the time he smells like gingerbread somehow.
Oh, man. Well, we'll get to food and snacks and other treats in a moment. But to start off, recap for last episode, Miss Cleo and Chris Single infiltrated the circus, tracked down their friends through the use of some extremely theatrical distraction and maneuvers by Chris Single. You all managed to make it out of the circus just as catastrophe began to strike. The groom began an incursion, appearing before Chris Single as his lost, divorced wife. But Chris Single kept his head about him, made it out, and raced in the direction of Vanilla, only to be ambushed by a member of the Church of Honda Days, who has been given his name and is tracking him down to try to kill him to accelerate the groom's incursion. Chris, I gotta say, really great thinking on your feet using those glow sticks that you got to rescue your party and get them safely back to Augie's stronghold, where Augie went to work, Liliana appeared to help out, and your party has recuperated, at least physically. And that is where we left off, was an agreement and focus of next steps to breach Vanilla. Augie provided you the update that Vanilla is currently on lockdown because the refugees from the destroyed city of Panda and the Order Infernus are right at the gates. And Vanilla, being an independent city that is ruled over by an ancient red dragon known as Hyrax, does not want the Order Infernus's presence, does not want the Church of Haunted Days to establish a foothold. They want to remain sovereign and independent, and allowing refugees and an entire militaristic order into the city just seems like the slow decline into that state. Augie has suggested that there is a mountain that overlooks from the western side of the city. The city essentially is a U shape. It has a northern coast with a bay with docks. The western side of the U is sort of a district that is occupied by the Blue Dragonborn. That area is known as Skyrock.
I love that.
There is a southern district that has historically been occupied by largely the Green Dragonborn, with some other unaffiliated Dragonborn thrown in of other colors. And that southern area is known as Greenwich Village. And the eastern side is known as Vermilion Village, which is the largely red dragon side. But first, let me set the scene. We open cinematically on a crackling fire in the living room of Augie's home. As the camera pans around the room, we can see that tentacle that previously attacked Norm is still writhing and roiling from the wall. The camera moves through the room and approaches the hallway and the staircase down into Augie's basement. And as we approach the staircase, we begin to hear the clanging of metal, of hammers, of heavy work being done in a workshop below. And as the camera descends the stairs and turns into the room on the right, we see a forge fire lighting the room in brilliant golden amber light. We feel intense heat and we hear sizzling of metal being tempered in water. And we see two very sweaty boys at work. As the camera pulls on Chris Single, we can see him fitting and assembling metal poles together, checking specifications on a blueprint on a table nearby, and then looking and reaching for canvas that he stretches across to form a hang glider.
Abby, do these measurements look right to you?
Yeah. I think you nailed them right down to the very millimeter. I think you've got this. This looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I really can't wait to feel the wind on our faces, or, you know, whatever my equivalent of a face is.
Mr. Single, you hear Miss Cleo's voice in your head. I have Groucho here, and since you seem to be finishing up your work, I was hoping that perhaps he could have a moment to speak with you, and I could do final checks of your work to make sure everything is properly fitted.
If you want to give it a look over, yeah, Augie and I have been working tirelessly, and I haven't had a chance to connect with Groucho since, you know, we rescued him kind of traumatically. So I'd love to connect with the chap.
That sounds just fine. I'm going to double check Mr. Beepo's harness so that he can be towed by you on your hang glider and land wherever you land, Chris.
Yeah, Operation Beepo Drop should be quite spectacular. We do have a emergency chute for him, yes?
Of course. We have emergency chutes for everyone.
Excellent. All right, Augie. I'll see you in just a moment. Gotta check in on the chap.
So Groucho is just outside the doorway and kind of peeks his head around. Are you going to talk to him in the hallway? Do you want to take him upstairs? What do you want to do?
I want to take him to a room so he feels more comfortable and not, like, just right outside the workshop in case he needs to share anything explicitly private with me.
So there is the TV room across the hall where Norm first encountered Augie when Augie was in his wizard's robe and just watching TV, if you want to go in there.
Sure.
So there's a nice couch, there's some chairs, there's some bookshelves, very well-appointed room. It's dimly lit by some candles right now, but there's enough light that, you know, you can see each other and find your way around.
All right, Groucho, how you doing? You okay?
Oh, I'm feeling much better. Liliana and Augie are quite skilled. I must say, it's a little bit strange to be in such consistent peril and yet feel so safe, thanks to the people in your body that Abby introduces me to. So I want to thank you and Abby. You apparently thought very quickly about how to get us to safety.
Well, yeah. We were in a really bad situation, you know, with quick thinking and calm minds. It was a success to get away. People are coming to kill me and each iteration of me because we are not from this world.
Well, Mr. Single, I'm at a bit of a crossroads, and I wanted to ask you something, and I hope you don't feel mad at me, but there might be a reason for me to stay in Vanilla. Would that be all right? I had a dream, and while I was being tended to, I was told in the dream that my parents, my real parents, not the people that I had to stay with in the home, but my real actual mother and father are in Vanilla.
Well, that's a tough one. How did you become separated from them initially?
Oh, well, I don't have memories of anything before this.
And he takes both of his hands and kind of puts them gently around the base of his neck in the nape of his fur.
All I remember is coming to, and this is how I was, this is how I am. And I was in the doctor's labs. With many others who ended up on the island. And that lab was in Vanilla. So it stands to reason that if I had a life before this, if there was a Groucho before me, perhaps that Groucho lived in Vanilla and his parents might still be there.
I don't want to dissuade you from this path because it could lead to joy and happiness. I will just lay out some of the situation as I see it. The city of Vanilla currently is surrounded by an army. Part of what we're going to do by going to Vanilla, besides rescuing Alpha Case and possibly reuniting you with your parents, is to help Vanilla remain sovereign. Now, how you ended up in that lab and what involvement your parents had in that decision are unknown. So I don't want to say it's a bad idea to want to try to meet your parents, because it could be a wonderful, beautiful thing. If you do go to find your parents, you're going to want to bring a buddy or two, because it's going to be hard once you connect with them to keep a clear head and see what is really happening. You need somebody else there to help you see. I want you to understand that it is possible that they could not be people that love you.
Give me a persuasion roll.
Woo, 19.
Groucho, his doggy eyes shut, and you begin to see tears streaming through them. And he whimpers out.
Even if they are horrible, then perhaps I should see them to confirm it so that these dreams won't plague me anymore.
As I said...
The voice in my dreams. The voice told me that my parents were there and that they want to see me.
The voice in your dreams. Did it sound familiar?
Ooh, that's a good question. Let me roll for Groucho.
I suppose all voices in dreams might sound familiar if they are in my dreams. But I couldn't place it.
I've encountered too much weirdness here to just say that, yeah, the voice in your dreams is totally not to be worried about at all. As I said, use the body system when going to find your parents, but I want you to have the understanding that the reason you ended up in that laboratory could very well be your parents.
And with tears still on his face that he begins wiping off with the sleeves of his sweater, he nods and says,
Mr. Single, if they aren't horrible, if I can stay with them, if they would have me as this new Groucho, Miss Cleo told me that you're Santa Claus. If you remained in this world, would you be Santa Claus again? And would you visit me on the solstice if I were a good boy?
Oh, Groucho, I don't think there's ever going to be a time when you're not a good boy. I know your heart, and I see you. You will always be visited by Santa. It might not be me, though. I don't think, the way things are going, that I'll be around forever. But when you are visited by this Santa, I want you to know that they are giving you a gift, and that gift is also from me.
And he's just going to give you a big hug?
I just hold him there.
I love you, Groucho. We have all loved you. And whatever happens next, the next me will also love you.
And with that, there is a gentle knock on the doorway. And Augie is leaning there with a smile on his face, and Liliana is beside him. And he says, "It's time if you're ready."
All right, Groucho. Get your suit on. It's time to fly.
So Augie grabs the folded hang gliders under his arms and takes you upstairs and out through the back door into the yard. Mr. Beepo is already there wearing his harness.
So Augie leads you upstairs and into the backyard where Mr. Beepo is already wearing his harness and already has a large hang glider currently folded into a compact position. You see Miss Cleo already has her hang glider under one arm, your hang glider under another, and she extends her arm to hold out your hang glider to you. Captain Ludlow, looking worse for the wear, back on his feet, fully healed, but wearing some bandages, walks over to Groucho and puts a hand gently on his shoulder and says, "Groucho, I'll help you get suited up. Are you sure you're ready for this?" Groucho nods his head and smiles at you and walks over to a corner of the yard with Captain Ludlow to get suited up.
Chris is going to take the hang glider from Miss Cleo and then give her a hug.
"Thank you for staying with me on this journey and for trusting me."
She receives the hug very stiffly, like arms at her side, and you can feel some kind of surprise at the gesture, but eventually her hands go up and she gives you like two very light pats on your back.
"I don't know what happens next, but I will put everything into helping you rescue Alpha Case."
She looks at you. Give me an insight roll for that, and you can take advantage.
17.
As implacable as her predator's expressions are, at the mere mention of Alpha Case, you see heartbreak tear across that visage. She looks to you, looks to Augie, looks to Groucho, looks back to you, and begins shaking her head. And you hear this thrumming noise building in your mind, as if she can't form words, but she's just communicating noise, anguish. Eventually, she says, "I didn't have time to tell you this, but Alpha Case is dead. His last words to me were, 'Faith.' He told me that with the void, with Mother missing, the only thing that could be done would be to follow her into nothingness. He told me to kill you, and to kill you repeatedly, until the groom could come and make us the void in which we could all be one. I'm sorry, I..." And she darts forward and takes the hang glider away from you and says, I didn't know what to do. I rigged your hang glider to fail, and yet you've proven something beyond the faith that I've tried to base my life around, of ineffable entities in an unfeeling void. You and the people I've met before you, you feel so much more real. And the things that you communicate and feel so much larger than those things that we claim not to understand. I am ashamed. I am ashamed of what I let my grief lead me to do. I will help you fix the hang glider and I can leave."
"You will not leave. You have been absolutely instrumental in helping us succeed in this journey, and I believe you still have a part yet to play. Grief is a terrible, terrible monster, and it can eat us from the inside out in a way that only someone who's dealt with such powerful grief can understand. I am sorry that Alpha Case is no longer with us. If you wish to leave the journey, that is obviously your choice. I will not make you come if you do not wish to be here. But I want you to know that if it weren't for you, I wouldn't be here today. We would never have rescued anyone else from that circus if you hadn't helped. You are important, and you are seen."
She nods, and after a moment, you see her body move towards you and then hesitate, and then finally she moves towards you again, and she returns the hug finally.
"I am truly sorry."
Augie clears his throat and says, "Not to put too fine a pin on it, but this is a tremendous risk that you are all undertaking. I think a statement of purpose, if only for yourselves, might be worthwhile. I don't think anyone will be judged harshly or negatively for choosing to turn back from what Chris has undertaken. But I want to be clear about what's going on. A god, a deity, an otherworldly entity known as Mother has disappeared. In that void, the Groom, another seemingly evil entity, is trying to chase her, is trying to subsume her, and will consume our universe if he has to, in order to reclaim her. We are trying to find a way to prevent that, and the best way we can slow it down until we can lock it up is to keep this man alive, because him dying opens the door that much wider for the Groom to continue coming through. Now, it seems as if a solution, or at least a stopgap, a band-aid, may be in vanilla. All signs have pointed to Dr. Frankenfooter's plot being instrumental to this incursion that is threatening our world. If you all go, Chris will benefit from having you all protect him, just as he has protected you. But if you go, understand that the risks of this adventure are greater than just swords and arrows and lightning. There is something here that is bigger than all of that. Augie bows his head at each one of them in turn and takes a step back. And he looks at you, Chris.
Right, well, now that's out of the way, I usually give a pre-takeoff speech. It's not really a fitting speech for today. Augie, you really set the stage properly. The danger is here, yes, but we are a collective soul, a collective heart, with a single purpose, united, to attempt to save this world and fight off the Groom. We are righteous. We are retribution. We are the ones to carry hope on the wind. And with that wind, we will soar into vanilla. So put your hands in, and on three, we're going to shout hope. One, two, three, hope.
So with that, Liliana and Augie help with outfitting you both. The repairs are made to the sabotaged hang glider, and Augie and Liliana pull out a scroll and have you all stand in a circle holding hands, and they stand on either side and begin to recite the magical words for you. And in a blink of an eye, you go from the warm stillness of Augie's backyard to feeling cool, crisp air whipping around you and feeling the bright light of dawn coming up over the eastern horizon. You are currently on a precipice. You've been teleported over the city of Vanilla. But let's start with a perception roll.
Okay, hold on, let me... Yeah, okay, 23. I used a luck point.
From where you and the group are currently positioned on the promontory overlooking the city with your perception roll, you can make out three different things before you take off and have to settle on where in the city you want to land. The first is that you can see this amphitheater. You know, I mentioned that the city's sort of this U-shape, where it opens into this northern bay. It has this mountain at the heart of it that you know is Hyrax's lair. And at the base of Hyrax's lair on the southern end is this enormous amphitheater that is filled with people right now. And you can just make out that there's a stage that has several people sitting on it. You're a little bit too high up to make out any details of the people. Closer to you on the western side of the city, which would be the Blue Dragon District, you can see this wide boulevard that seems to have shops and other sorts of vendors. And on the southern entrance to the city, you can see that there are the crowds of the refugees from the city of Panda. Several hundred people are camped outside, and you can just make out some kind of an uproar coming from those people. You can see that a group of people, a caravan, a small caravan, are being admitted into the city through that main entrance. Off in the distance, you can see maybe just over a day's travel away for a force of this size, but you can see an approaching force at the horizon
that are carrying Order of Infernus banners. So where would you like to try to land with your hang gliders?
So we got a couple options, but I think our best bet is to land on that strip right there near the congregation of Dragonborn. It looks like a large body of people are assembled, possibly to discuss the events of the current siege on the city. I don't look it, but I do enjoy trotting the boards on occasion. Big fan, actually. I spend a lot of time doing the stage performances of our safety videos. You know, employee plays about workplace safety and, you know, sexual harassment and other things. You know, I was really big into trying to make it more fun, you know. Serious topics need some levity.
All right, well, we're going to start off.
Sorry, Chris is like, he really gets into the workplace safety videos.
I don't have anything any of the group can say to that. I can't picture any of them having a reaction other than just nodding and saying, you know what, he's taken care of us thus far, like, whatever he's talking about.
I love this character. Thank you so much for letting me play him again.
I love him too. All right, so I want you to do me a favor to start off. Give me a D100 roll.
That's a 95.
As the sun begins coming up, you can tell that it's going to be a hot summer day. And you can tell also that with this heat, the winds that you currently have are going to arrest very abruptly once the sun starts heating the air. So it is going to make gliding and getting a certain amount of distance very challenging.
What I want is I'm going to make stealth rolls for everybody. And we're going to take the average of all the rolls to determine how many people in the city spot you all flying off of this cliff into the city.
You want one for me too?
Yep.
My stealth roll was 15.
Okay, so far nobody has gotten below a 15. Even Mr. Beepo, who rolled at disadvantage, still managed to get a 14 on stealth. There's a lot going on in the city right now. People are distracted by the noise coming from the southern gate as the refugees outside are in an uproar. And as you all take off from the cliff, flying smoothly, you begin to realize that the reason is that there is a caravan being admitted to the city, but the gate is being shut behind them. And as you begin to swoop closer and closer to the city, you can make out that caravan. You can see two members of it that look familiar walking at the head of it, being escorted by Blue Dragonborn. One of them is Father Tully, and the other one is the mysterious man who instigated the ritual at the church just a day ago that led to Silvo's demise and Norm's arrival. And you can see that they have a retinue of similarly dressed people with them as they march up the main boulevard to the southeast of where you all are currently flying. One other distraction that keeps people's eyes away from this large aerial incursion coming from the west is when you look to Hyrax's lair, you see him emerge from the southern opening. He roars over the city and spreads his wings, and he takes off flying directly south towards the southern gate and over the refugees of Pandan. He is sweeping quickly over the plains to the south of his city and veering to the east where I mentioned those Order of Infernus armies are coming from. Are you continuing to track Lord Hyrax's and kind of focus on where he's going and what he might be doing, or are you focused on your landing?
Right. Ignore what just happened. Head on. We're going to land on the boulevard.
I believe that landing a hang glider is going to be something of a feat of either athletics or acrobatics. I would want one or either of those rolls from Chris, and I will roll for the rest of the party to see how well they affect their landings.
Here comes some athletics. I got a 25.
Yet again, the entire party came through. Nobody rolled below a 17 for the party. So you all expertly bend and curve and come right in dead center on the boulevard. And when you land, as you look around, you see shops promising potions and tonics. You see ingredients for wizards and component shops. You see standard sundries and traveling supplies, general stores. As if by providence, and we can call providence Dungeon Master Wish Fulfillment, you land in front of a store with a garish sign of fuchsia lettering on lime green backdrop saying, "The Marvelous Professor Frankenfooters, Home of Sundries, Solutions, and Insight." What would you like to do?
Well, well, well. Just the man we were looking for. I know we have a lot of things to get done here, but I think that starting with Frankenfooter might be getting a lot out of the way. He might even have the answer for how to handle the groom. You know, we can try and look around and see if we can find the other people. Maybe we can find Alpha Case. I'm not convinced.
You say that, but you see two blue dragonborn rushing up the boulevard at you as people landing on the streets, the people shopping. You obviously caused quite a clamor. And there are two blue dragonborn that look to be city guards. They're armed. They are shouting at you. They have their hands on their weapons and they're quickly coming up on you. Party is looking to you for a decision. What would you like to do?
Right. Everyone, follow after me. And I'm going to start posing and flexing and inviting people in to the Chris Single experience. Come one, come all, step right up to the strong man, Chris Single.
All right, give me a roll for performance for the Chris Single experience.
I got a 14.
Groucho and Ludlow are not familiar with your theatrics. However, Miss Cleo definitely is. She is going to roll performance. You just hear this loud, ear-splitting sort of whining noise as if somebody has put a microphone too close to a speaker, so you're getting that feedback noise. And you can see her holding her hands against her chest as if she's singing. She rolled terribly on performance to try to back you up with a song.
I love that. Miss Cleo, hop, hop. Let me lift you for the audience.
She nods, and she is going to run at you like in Dirty Dancing.
Awesome.
What do you get for your performance or acrobatics roll?
Let's do acrobatics. With some luck, that's an 18.
She only got a 12, but what I was looking for was for your scores to combine to at least a 25. So as she runs at you, there's a moment of unsureness, and the crowd is completely confused as to what might be happening. But then you hoist her up by her waist and you slowly spin her around. The guards that were shouting for you to stop and, "Oi, what are you doing? What are you doing here in the town square?" They stop dead.
Oh, you just made it.
Just made what?
You made it just in time for the show. And I'm going to spin Miss Cleo and catch her in one arm.
All right. I think that needs one more acrobatics or performance roll. You can take your choice.
That's a dirty 20.
Okay. She isn't quite sure of what you're going to do, but she's got the reflexes and control to roll with you. And she lands perfectly on your arm. So like you're holding her up like a strong man. And then you swing and swoop. And then you're carrying her bodyguard style. And then she does this perfect pirouette, swinging her legs. And the fact that she's wearing, I should remind you, this blank black mask with these gold accents that are catching the light in such an interesting way is really dazzling the crowd, especially with the colors that you're still wearing from your tie-dye outfits.
The garish tie-dye outfits.
The tie-dye outfits with the black mask and gold accents, the moves. You hear a voice from behind the blue dragonborn city guards saying, "Hey, these here are my associates. They had to come in, but I got approval from Hyrex before he took off." And you see a very handsome elf with black hair standing behind the blue dragonborn, who now look completely befuddled.
I'm gonna set Miss Cleo down gently, and then we'll do a quick bow. I'll nudge Groucho, and he'll run out with a hat.
All right, Groucho is going to roll charisma at advantage. You get 97 gold from Groucho running the crowd as people are just cheering, they're enjoying it. And this elf steps forward and takes the front and just says, "Now, these here are my associates, as you're all aware. Marvelous Professor Frankenfurter, he may be a one-man show, but that don't mean it's the only show he puts on. So these here folks, they're here to help me with a project I'm working on for Lord Hyrax. So if you want to see more, I suggest you show up tomorrow at our presentation at the lair. But till then, thank you all for coming. Thank you all for your service." And he nods and salutes at the blue dragonborn, and he kind of cocks his head at the group to go into his shop.
We bow again. I do the kiss gesture.
"You've been too kind, too kind. Doctor, I presume?"
"No, that's my daddy's Dr. Frankenfurter. You can call me Marv."
"Oh, Marv. I'm going to predator handshake Marv."
Go ahead and give me... I feel like a predator handshake is just pure strength.
12.
And Marv gets the handshake. Roll a d4 for me, please.
Okay. 3.
Marv takes 3 bludgeoning damage from your predator shake. Just goes, "Ah, hot damn, boy. All right. I understand. Let's get that inside. I'm going to put some water and ice on that. Damn."
"Oh, sorry. I thought you were familiar with the handshake of the people."
"I've seen it, but I'm not one to be ready for it. Come on in, boy. You got fire in that palm." So he holds the door open in a genteel fashion for the party as you all walk in. Give me a perception roll.
13.
This is clearly a bespoke magical solution shop. You've seen these sorts of things before. Well-educated wizards and mages set up shop to sell tonics, various solutions, enchantments, maybe even scrolls. This one looks fairly depleted. The shelves are fairly bare. It looks a little bit messy, like the shop has not been taken care of, but you can see lights coming from a back room behind a curtain, and you definitely get this sweet and kind of acidic smell. And he waves for you all to follow as he moves towards that curtain and walks into the back, and you can just, this wave of hot air just comes from behind that curtain and just hits you as if somebody has had an oven on in there all day.
"What's cooking?"
"As well, this is the project I've been working on for Lord Hyrax. Been trying to reverse engineer something. And, I'm looking for any bit of luck I can get because my meeting is 24 hours from now and I still haven't cracked this formula. But I figure if some people drop out of the sky, well, what's more providential than that? Figure I should talk to y'all. So tell me, who are you?"
"My name's Chris. And this is the party. For those who wish to introduce themselves, they may. Otherwise, I can do it myself."
"Oh, I'm Groucho. I'm from the Rock."
And you see Marv look at Groucho and fidget very uncomfortably. And he just nods silently. Ludlow steps forward with a hand on his sword and says, "I'm Ludlow, a Knight of the Shining."
"And I am Miss Cleo, member of the Sanctuary."
"Oh, quite the assortment you got here.
And that's Mr. Beepo."
"Well, Mr. Beepo outside, he'll be safe out there. I don't think anybody's going to mess with something that big, even if he does look cuddly-wuddly. If anything, he might just get too many treats. I hope they don't ruin his appetite."
"Now, were you on the island where Groucho was? Saw you wince a bit when you mentioned that."
"No, it's been, guess like I said about Providence, it's my daddy coming back to haunt me again. Folk on them island are all a result of things my daddy did. Young man, you familiar with Dr. Frankenfurter?"
Yes. They told us on the island that whoever we were before we are who we are, the Dr. Frankenfurter is the one that took our original heads and replaced them. So, yes, I believe I do know who Dr. Frankenfurter is. He's your father, isn't he?"
That'd be right, and sins of the father and all that, I know I can't make up for it, and I certainly am not level of scientist to fix what my daddy did."
"Oh no, there's nothing to fix. I am who I am, and I'm proud of that. That's what Pam told me, that's what Stephen told me, that's what Chris has told me, and that's what Norm would have told me if I'd met him, I'm sure."
"That's right. Do you happen to have his records?"
"Guess I was right about that intuition.
Lord Hyrax has been making a business of collecting everything from my daddy. Well, I got here in just in time to keep him from taking the equipment that you see in here. And to describe the room, it's a workshop. There are chemistry supplies all around the room, different solutions cooking. It looks like a real cartoon mad scientist setup with all the beakers and Bunsen burners and, you know, the micturation of and titration of different liquids and solutions being cooked and mixed and run through tubes and then dilated and things like that. He goes over to the shelves and you can see that the shelves are bare. All my daddy's books used to be in here. I don't know if my daddy had any special hiding spots, but considering how thorough they were by the time I got here, I wouldn't be surprised if they got into the secret hidey holes and took everything out. He's been making a point of collecting all my daddy's equipment, too, from the gateway that I've been trying to rebuild, but I don't have the notes, and all I can do is put it back together. At least from memory of the one time I saw it.
Gateway, you say? Did he build that gateway, and did he use it?
Give me an insight roll.
Four.
He pauses, and you can see that something is concerning to him, but he shakes something away, like, forcefully. And he continues,
well, my daddy turned that gateway on, and I don't know what he did with it, but nobody has seen him since. I thought maybe if I turned it back on, perhaps I'd be able to find my daddy. All I was able to do was reach in and thinking that I might have found his hand waiting to grip mine so I could pull him back through. And instead, all I gripped was this. And he turns around and he lifts this clear bottle from behind him that is wrapped in a red label. And on the label, he turns it to face you. And it says, Mountain Dew Code Red.
Have you tried opening that?
Well, trying to be precious about it. I don't know if I'll ever be able to get this back again, but I've been trying to reverse engineer it. That's what all this is about. He shows you indicates the chemistry set. And he cracks it open and you hear the hiss of a well-carbonated drink. And he holds it up to you and he says, now, be judicious now. He passes it to you.
Well, Chris being Chris, a bright red liquid that makes a nice hiss sound appealing to his ear. So I pour a little bit into a cup.
I believe you should be careful, but I respect your pursuit of knowledge. Do you drink the Code Red?
I'm going to take a sip.
Give me a D100 roll.
That's a 19.
You feel warmth in your throat as it goes down. You feel that warmth begin to radiate out all the way from your belly, down your limbs, and then out to your skin. You feel comfortable. You feel healthy. You feel hale. You also feel a little bit warm in this room. You now have resistance to cold damage.
Yes.
Ah, see that you're taking that down like a real champ. See, this potion from whatever world it came from is some kind of magic that I'm trying to replicate for Lord Hyrax. And I'm hoping, based on an agreement that I have with his assistant, that if I can replicate this potion, make it repeatable, creatable for whatever his forces might need to use it for, that I will have access to the tools of my daddy that he's managed to collect. See, I believe he's managed to rebuild most of the gate. The only thing missing, apparently, is the battery to power the damn thing.
You having trouble with the battery? Power source is your issue. Have you found anything close?
All I know is that my daddy, when he first put the thing together, he mentioned something about crystals of communion and power crystals and things like that that are able to tap into energies beyond our world.
That sounds like the crystal that we use to communicate with Mother.
You got a crystal for talking to your mommy?
Our mother is a deity beyond this dimension, spanning multiple dimensions. We had a crystal that your father, Dr. Frankenfooter, borrowed from us and promised to repower. Could that have been the battery that you are describing?
Certainly sounds like it. But he promised to repower it, huh? How long ago did you see him? How many years ago was this?
Oh, not years ago. It was several days ago.
He came back through that portal. My daddy's alive.
And you see Marv put his face in his hands and just look forlorn.
Why he's forlorn, Marv?
I know it's not right to speak ill of one's daddy, but I think even saying that he's a monster is still not telling the whole truth. I try to think about him. I try to reconcile the things he did, the things he taught me, and all I can remember is a monster. But when I think back even harder, those memories, that face, just don't make sense. I see this terrifying thing, not an elf, because everybody tells me my daddy was an elf. My mama tells me my daddy was an elf, but when I think about it, what I see, it's not an elf, it's this unnatural thing, this skinless monstrosity, raw muscle, exposed nerve cartilage, unblinking eyes, filled with greed and anger. I don't know how that could be real, but when I look at the things that that monster did to this world, and his eyes settle on Groucho at this, the harder thing for me to believe is that he could possibly be walking around, just doing things.
Yeah, that's certainly hard to grapple with. I can't even imagine gazing upon such a horrible visage. Tell me, do you see him in your dreams?
He just nods slowly and looks up at you.
For that, I'm sorry. Terrible sight to behold. Marv, I don't know how you've been raised, but I can tell you right now that you've got a good heart in your chest and a good head on your shoulders. I know that this world has someone else in my shoes, but my name's Chris Single, and I used to be Santa Claus in my world. I say used to, because Mrs. Claus took everything. And more from me.
If you don't mind, not to be rude about your married life troubles, but I think you're burying the lead there, my friend. You said your world?
Yeah. Figured I would get to that now, since we've been talking about portals. A little ways back, a version of me was pulled through into this realm. And ever since, versions of me have been coming to in this realm. It seems that there's something tying us here.
I was captain of the guard for the Order Infernus on the rock, and Ludlow extends a hand to calm Marv because he sees him tense up. I have resigned that position, partly due to my encounter with the first occupant of this body, a person who found themselves resurrected from our graveyard. When that person died, the body reformed and was inhabited by another person. And in a number of deaths since then, the body has refused to remain dead, but has consistently been reoccupied and reanimated with a new person. Presently, the Mr. Single that you see here before you. Do you have the letter that you were buried with? And he looks at you, Chris Single.
I believe this is what you're referring to, Ludlow.
Yes. That is why we have come this far in pursuit of your family name, in pursuit of you as your father's son. Do you hand the letter to Marv?
Take a look, Marv. This ink seems to be magic of some sort.
Marv reads over the letter. Not your traveling papers, but this is the letter that refers to the throne that Stephen Hark found on his person when he was brought out of the grave by Mr. Pringle. Marv looks at it. And then he gets to the signature. This ain't my writing. This is my daddy's writing. I know this handwriting. I've seen it in books. I've been reading it my whole life when he was tutoring me and trying to turn me into the artificer he wanted me to be, but I didn't write this for you. That is unexpected. So, your father, and Ludlow looks at you. Dr. Frankenfooter stopped by the sanctuary for the crystal, and Miss Cleo confirms. Yes, he did. It seems as if he acquired the crystal, arranged for your group to commit the atrocity at the city of Panda, and then perhaps infiltrated the rock to initiate whatever Chris Single is now a party member to in this chain of resurrection.
I don't know anything about us initiating anything. Seems like the city kind of had a mishap. It wasn't anything we had any responsibility over.
Seems like your dad might be causing chaos across the realm. You mentioned that the king is trying to gather all the objects, all the machines that your father built.
Yeah, but he's still missing a couple. Apparently there's acquisition devices there putting it, but way I know it is, it's a grabby claw. Apparently they need a grabby claw and the skin extractor, but word came to me that apparently the Green Party acquired the skin extractor. No idea why they need that for a gateway, but as soon as they assemble those things, Hyrax is going to have access to the gateway that allowed me to reach across the realms and pull out this magical potion.
Do you think that Hyrax having access to that is a good idea? I met his son, relatively nice chap, but seems like his dad's kind of a jerk. Is that something you can back up?
Hyrax is an ancient dragon. You don't get to be an ancient dragon by being nice.
That we know of. Perhaps the nice one just keeps himself secluded, stays to his own business.
What you have to understand is that Hyrax's interpretation of ethics and morals is based on a completely different scale than ours. Pun intended. And he gives a winsome smile.
I mean, you know, we could flap our gums and make the jokes, but the reality of the situation is Hyrax is going to have control of this portal before long.
That's what it sounds like. Green Party probably going to present it to him tomorrow. Apparently they're up on their presentation after me. They've got the skin extrapolator for the night and their side of town. We don't know where the grabby claw is. And yeah, once he assembles all those items, I'd imagine having a tool like that to increase his hoard, increase his magical access, Hyrax, probably going to flip that switch and who knows what's going to happen.
You said they're skin extractors across town, huh?
That's where the greens are located.
Do you have the rest of the items?
No, all the rest of the items have already been assembled by Lee Mu. That's Hyrax's executive assistant, head captain of the guard, what you want to call it. Lee Mu tends to change their titles whenever they feel like it, but hey, closest thing to Hyrax that ain't Hyrax.
Okay. Well, that's unfortunate. So besides this beverage, nothing else came through on your end.
Nothing at least that I was present for, but, well, and now he thinks about it. Give me a persuasion roll.
And here's where I use my last luck. Much better, 17.
That thing, something, came through the gate. That's why I ran off and Hyrax's people have been able to collect the items that they needed from the gate. But when I turned it on and I was able to get this here potion, something did come through after I extracted it. Shambling monster, dripping blood, with this black cloak shining like living slime, carrying the skin extrapolator. I saw that monster and I lit out. I'm not one for drawing swords and putting up arms against monsters. And he looks at all of you with your weapons and your armaments. But whatever that thing was came through the gate, I just tore out. I've been focused so much on this potion, trying to make something of this potion, of this project. Now that I'm here talking about my daddy for the first time, I'm starting to realize that monster came through was my daddy. But it wasn't my daddy. Now when I think of my daddy, he's that. He's that thing, that skinless, shambling, blood-soaked thing. But he never used to be that. I know growing up my daddy was not that monster. Something happened in that gate. Something happened and came back through as that thing. But what's confusing to me, what I don't understand, Chris, is he didn't just come back through the gate as that thing now. He came back through the gate and became that thing in the past as well.
You're telling me your dad walked out of a portal with the skin extrapolator as if he went through on his side with it?
Sure seems like it. I don't know if he found it somewhere or if he made it himself, but all I know is what he came out as and that I haven't seen that thing since. But I do know that the gate is here. It's in Lord Hyrax's lair and just trying to get to it. I'm thinking if I could somehow at least be in a position where I could help control it, earn my way into that and change things from the inside. Because I heard that always works when people try to change things from the inside.
In my experience, that is the best way to influence and help is to reach in and touch somebody. Now, you're saying you have a plan, at least an idea of a plan, to potentially change the outcome of this portal opening. Is that right?
And at this, the winsome smile returns again. And he says, well, having a fella who can't really die means that you can roll certain dice that might not be smart to roll in other situations. And him showing up with a crew as colorful as this, well, possibilities are endless. Way I see it is, Lord Hyrax does not typically leave his lair. On the one hand, we potentially got an opening right now to get to the gate that's currently in his lair before he comes back. On the other hand, we got the Green Party probably going to be having one hell of a celebration. I think we might be able to put together some sort of a plan, because it looks like you already put together one hell of a team.
That's what I'm known for, and what my previous selves are known for, is being able to not just form a group, but hold it together.
Marv stands up and extends a hand, and he says, well then, sounds like you're picking up what I'm putting down. You ready to do a heist with me?
I've never heard more sweeter words in my entire life, Marv. Put her there.
Let's close out with a roll for one more predator shake.
So that's a 13 for my strength.
So Marv has a negative 1 to strength.
Oh boy.
But he rolled a 19.
Yes.
We get the predator shake to close the episode. Boom.
Thank you for listening to this episode of D&D Versus. This episode features Nate York as Chris Single, and yours truly, Yanata Blue, as your Dungeon Master. Support our podcast and get access to ad-free episodes on our Patreon. Visit patreon.com/D&D Versus. Our next episode comes at you August 21st.